TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Welcome in, Raised by Wolves. Danny Cunningham, Dane Moore. And Dane, I have to open up with the hardest hitting question I can possibly think of. Although it's not that hard hitting. I told you last night this is how I was going to open up the podcast, but here we are. Who do you think Andrew Wiggins thinks first in his MVP acceptance speech?
I think it's us.
You think so?
I think it's me. No, I'm just kidding. It's crazy, man. This is wild. Like we were just talking about before this. We found ourselves. I mean, we sit next to each other at the games now, and I don't know. It's not laugh. I mean, you were laughing, but you weren't laughing at him. It's like
I'm laughing that this has happened. Like I can't put into words how this is. Just it felt like something so unlikely has happened. And I don't, it's just felt unlikely because of the sample size, the ginormous sample size of Andrew Wiggins not necessarily being a good NBA player has been entirely flipped on its head. And I can't believe what I'm watching on a nightly basis at this point.
Except once you do consider what's happened in these 11 games and you've watched it, you go, why the hell did they not do this the past 5 years of his? I mean, on a really basic scale of like what is making him successful, right? Spacing all over the floor, and you're asking him to get ahead of steam and go all the way to the rim.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is not a novel concept. The novel element of it is that he's obliged and agreed to do what they're saying because we know. I mean, for years. After poor shooting nights, they said, you know what happened tonight? Like, what was going on with the shot? And he goes, I like my shot. I continue to shoot, even though it was like 4 for 19, whatever.
Just didn't hit.
And he's like, that's okay. If the shots are there, I'm going to take it. That's what makes us crazy is not that he is having success. It's that he's chosen this way to find it.
It's the way that he's having success.
Yes.
Because when his stats are tweeted out or like whatever the last 7 games have been, the last 5 games have been, all that stuff, which has been really good, the immediate response from someone that doesn't believe that this is actually who Andrew Wiggins is now, which, again, I can understand still because this has been a short sample size of an 11-game season thus far. But he's playing so much differently than
It's not even the small sample size because it's every single game he's playing a completely different way than he was before.
But I'm talking
not just
the numbers.
I'm
talking
numbers. I know, but to anyone who's saying that, you're not putting your eyeballs on the game.
No,
this
you're
is
not.
Every single game, every 35 minutes he plays the entirety of the 35 minutes different than he did the previous 14,000 minutes of his career.
Mm-hmm.
The way he's playing it. Honestly, I'm not even super into the numbers of it right now because... Because, yes, there is small sample size bias and all that. He is playing basketball in a way that will lead to long-term success.
Yes.
That is ignorant of whatever, however big or small a sample is. That style of play works when you're 6'8", freakishly athletic, and have a decent jump shot.
Yeah. It's worked about as well as anyone, I think, could have ever envisioned it. He's been, and last night excluded, Carl has kind of been out of a rhythm since his suspension. I think last night he found it a little bit. He was still only 3 of 9 from three, but he actually was 11 of 13 from the line, which has not been what he's been this year. So I do think that there are signs that he's finding a rhythm. He had 28 points and 11 rebounds. But Andrew was the best player on the floor.
I still say eye test cats out of a rhythm.
Yeah, but Andrew was, again, the best player on the floor. 100%. There have basically been 2 games this year where Andrew hasn't been the best player on the floor for the Wolves. And that's wild to think about because they're 7-4.
Yeah, I mean, what I wrote yesterday was, I mean, they were 6-4 at the time before this game. But that, I mean, there's 4 games for sure in my mind that they lose if Andrew Wiggins isn't on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And so then... And that being the Brooklyn game, the Miami game, the Golden State game, and the Detroit game. They for sure lose that game, not only because he played well, but because they didn't have another player with his skill set on the roster that could fill in that void that they
sure.
needed there. And so, if that is true, if I'm right, that they lose those 4 games without him, then they're 2-8. And then you have this next game.
We're all on tankathon.com already seeing what the odds are for the number one pick. Like, and truthfully, it wasn't crazy to expect that to be the way the season trended.
Yeah.
But Andrew Wiggins is, I don't want to say saved it because it's way too early to use that. But like you said, the reason they're 7-4 is because of Andrew Wiggins for the most part.
I think my drumroll hot take
I love a Dane Moore spicy take.
I think it can get even better. I really do.
I don't disagree.
I think this set a bar for expectations of, well, now we know you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't mean, again, I don't mean a statistical bar of like 54% shooting and 27 points a night or stuff,
sure,
like that.
He's still going to go through hot and cold streaks.
Exactly, exactly. But I'm saying a bar of understanding that this is what you are capable of doing for a prolonged stretch. Then I think you can start parsing through, what are the things that he isn't quite comfortable with yet? I think there's elements of this new system that he's still figuring out. And it could get better, because even though this is very good, there's elements of it that aren't perfect. Mm-hmm. I think he's kind of struggling with the pace that this team is playing with.
Sure.
Like, if you look at the coaches he's played throughout his career, Sam Mitchell and Tom Thibodeau, they played extremely slow. And that classically conditioned him to be a slower type of player. Now you crank it up to being fourth in pace in the league.
With no steps in between. It's not like they gradually worked their way up from 26th to fourth. No, it was all right, let's go. We're running now.
He was a player who played in slow-paced schemes and found comfort in slow-paced schemes.
Sure.
He got his 20 a night through his little isolations into pull-up games.
Mm-hmm.
And now this scheme is saying, no, go faster, play in transition, which is actually a better utility of his skill set. He's just not used to that there. I mean, I thought it popped for me, is this is the first season of his career where he's scoring under 1 point per possession in transition situations. It's funky to him. I mean, he's been well over one every other year of his career because it was like a lesser volume. So he was just, his transition things were fewer and further between, more cleaner looks. Now he's, I don't know, those numbers to me suggest that he's still developing a comfort in it. And what's to say he couldn't get back up to where he was playing?
Well, I think it's not fair to say that he's still not adjusting. Like, he is still figuring his way through this. The results have been really good, but that doesn't mean he's still not learning and growing every night and still becoming more and more comfortable every night. That's what I think, aside from the numbers or whatever, that's why I think he still has more room to grow, because he's only going to get more comfortable playing this way and doing this. And there's a 14,000-minute sample size that shows a comfort level in something else.
Yeah.
We've got about a 400-minute sample size of this, and he's already been this good. As that number gets up, as he hits 1,000 minutes, 2,000 minutes, whatever it turns out to be at the end of this year, we're going to look back and say, remember how good he was in October, not really even October, November more is when this mm-hmm. started. Look how much more comfortable he now looks in March, in April, potentially in the playoffs. And I'm not saying that the numbers are always going to be there, because like I said, you're going to have hot and cold nights. Yeah. But he's going to look more comfortable and look like a more complete player as things roll along here, I think.
I think the next question becomes, okay, do you continue to become more comfortable with the adjustments and continue to grow off of those? He's not getting the free throw line at all. Does he get even better from the 3-point line?
Mm-hmm.
Does he get more comfortable with the space? Do you make those adjustments? Or are you going to be, because teams are going to start adjusting to him?
Yes.
Now, how much do those things fight back? Again, we have this bar, so the adjustments that he's going to make from there could move him up, and then the defenders, the opponents, are going to move him back down. How can he fight that balance? Because it's going to keep changing.
I think that balance is going to be something fought not only by him, but I think that it's going to benefit Cat.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing here. Carl's been a great player for a couple of years now. Like, there's no question about that. There's no debating that he is a top, at the very least, if you are not high on Cat, he's a top 20 player in the NBA, and there's no debating that. If you're higher on that, he's closer to 10, whatever. That's not the conversation we need to have right now. But as Andrew continues to play like this and defenses have to then adjust to him, that's going to free up Carl a little bit more. It's going to change the way that he's able to play. He's going to have more space. He's going to be better. And that's going to be the balance opposing teams are going to have to fight.
It's a super basic equation.
Yeah.
They're playing a 5-out set. So Andrew has to beat one person to the bucket because Cat is not in the paint with his guy on him. So it's just one guy to the lane. There's not another guy there to defend him. So the adjustment a team's going to have to make is helping off of that more.
Mm-hmm.
And And then if they do put a second defender in the paint to try and cut him off in the way that like teams do against Giannis in the lane, then there's going to be open guys on the perimeter like Kat.
Yeah.
Particularly if Kat is directly engaged in the action, if it's a pick and roll with him and Andrew, the pop part of it is going to be that if they want to devote more than one defender to Andrew in a Kat Wiggins pick and roll, then Kat's guy is going to be part of that.
Yeah.
And he's going to become more open. Yes. Like it's either Andrew's going to continue to keep doing what he's doing, or they're going to adjust and Kat's going to have the opportunity to do more than he already is.
And Kat's is going to be putting up the numbers that he put up before the suspension this year. What it's going to be. That is the decision the opposition is going to have to make on a regular basis now. And that's not something I ever expected to say, but here we are and it feels very real.
Like, but they're putting him in the actions. Putting Kat in the actions. I mean, how many times over the past 4 years of his career have people been saying he is an elite high pick and roll big man?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you not using him as a roll man, as a popper? I mean, he was so frequently just asked to play in the post. I mean, it's not that he never ran pick and rolls before, but now it is such a mainstay of the diet that, of course, your offensive efficiency is going to improve when you put your best player in your go-to action. Like, thank you. It's finally happening.
Yeah, it's ridiculous that it's happening. And it's, I run out of words to just say how impressed I am that this has happened. And I want to, who do you think deserves?
We're a bunch of cheerleaders now. This is the Wolves love pot.
And the thing is, I've been the furthest from that. I was more pessimistic about this team than almost anyone that covers them on a regular basis. I think you were on more of the high end of optimism. I was on the low end of pessimism.
Not because of Andrew Wiggins.
Like just in terms of coming into this year, you expected more out of this team than I certainly did.
Because of the system, though.
Yes.
Right. And I think that is the biggest thing of all of this, is this offensive system makes sense for. Why I was betting on it was because it made sense for Carl. What we've come to learn is this offensive system works for Andrew as well.
Yeah.
And that is your reasoning for bumping your projected win total up out of the high 30s and into the 40s.
And I mean, as of today, 538 gives the Wolves.
I'm not a big 538 person either.
But as of today, 538.com gives the Wolves a 76% chance of making the playoffs. And that's not a sentence I expected to utter at any time this year. I'm not a big 538 person. I don't necessarily buy into their equations, all that stuff. But
I just don't know what I don't know what is going into that. Like, that's a little bit too much for me. But yes, the Wolves are definitely in the playoff conversation.
It feels like a toss up.
I haven't really.
Like maybe 45 yes. 55 no, like somewhere in
that
area.
I gotta let it digest a little bit more. I'm not ready to go there yet.
Spewing hot takes and now you have to digest something.
My hot take is that Andrew Wiggins can get even better than he is. I don't know if they're a playoff team in my book yet, but it's
early.
For sure close. It is close.
It's 11 games. I'm not ready to anoint them either, but I've been impressed.
I was thinking this last night though. The Wolves, and they're dealing with a little bit of their injuries now. But I was thinking, for the Wolves to make the playoffs, another team like the Warriors falling out due to injury would probably need to happen. If that happened, I would feel confident about them make the playoffs. The thing that the Wolves have going for them, in both Andrew and Carl again, is those guys do not get hurt.
No.
Like, and they're, I mean, then they're young, whereas you more go to take Portland, for example, where you got Dame's like 30, 29.
I think he's 29.
Yeah. And McCollum's like 27 or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think a lot of the teams who right now we would put higher in the Western Conference hierarchy, you would go, I think their best players are more likely to get hurt. Paul Millsap, Jokic does. I mean,
he hasn't done himself favors by getting in shape.
That's why. I mean, I know he's the same age as Kat, basically, but
Carl is in a much better physical shape than Jokic is.
I mean, I think Anthony Davis or LeBron could be lost for the year, and that the Lakers would still be in the playoff mix if one of them did. But again, those are older guys. Like, I don't know. I feel confident about the Wolves' health.
Yeah,
well, being better than the rest of the group.
There have been a lot of reasons where anyone could have been critical about Andrew over the course of his entire career up until these last 11 games. Uh-huh. A lot of reasons. You could never knock him for not being out there on the floor, though. I mean, he's played 82 games three times already. He's played 81 in another season. And last year, he had some minor bumps and bruises that they held him out for. They were cautious with him, I do think.
Because like
he played 73 games, yeah. But to play, never to play less than 73 games in a season, and you're in your sixth year, is a really impressive thing. There's no sign that that's going to change. There's no sign Carl, who the first time he missed games in his entire career was because of a car accident. Like, think about that. Carl went
95%.
Four plus years without missing a game, and the only thing that caused him to miss a game was a car accident that gave him a concussion or concussion-like symptoms.
You can
actually count on these things. Like, you can...
That's my point.
Yeah.
That's my point. I was trying to think off the top of my head. I knew they play Washington and Houston this weekend, which, again, home. Washington's not very good.
No, it should and be. Houston has a tough task coming here on after playing Friday in Texas.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it'll be back-to-back for both the Wolves and the Rockets, but they have to fly.
And Clint Capella's already not playing Friday. He had a head injury last night, so he might not be available Saturday.
And I would keep, I mean, you got to keep your eye on, they got older guys playing back-to-backs.
Well, I think that their plan is to rest Russ in one half of back-to-backs.
So maybe he plays Friday or Saturday.
Yeah, so you could be looking at a Houston team that doesn't have Westbrook or Capella.
So then, So then if you win those two, then they're 9-4.
I mean, 78-4, not out the window.
But then what I was going to say is, then the next thing you have coming up, and I've always had these two games circled on my calendar, is it's not a back-to-back, but it's Monday and Wednesday back-to-back games against the Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing I know Kat is particularly irked about, it's not making All-NBA last year, which I absolutely understand for all the financial reasons. And Rudy Gobert was the one who got that third slot. It's like he's going to be up for those games against Utah. And if he can...
And he's always played well against Utah. He hasn't struggled against Gobert the way that other bigs have struggled against Gobert, primarily because he's the best shooting big.
Right.
That's a big part of the reason why. Like, his career numbers and his numbers against Gobert are not far off.
Sure.
Where for some guys like a Joel Embiid or a Jokic, it's a different story where they do struggle against the premier interior defender in the NBA, where Carl really doesn't.
If they're able to win those Jazz games.
Mm-hmm. Both of them or even split?
I'm just saying.
Because Utah's a really tough place to win.
That's true. If the way it happens is Kat's out of his mind because he's got a grudge. I know he has a grudge. I don't know if he can play out of his mind. He's kind of out of rhythm. But if that does happen.
Could be in rhythm by then.
Sure. And even let's just say they lose the Houston game. So now you're 10-5 and you've just beat Utah twice, who a lot of smart people have being the best or one of the best teams in the West.
Top four seed.
That is. There's no more holes to poke.
No.
There's no more holes to poke at that point. You're in it. Like, you are. The Wolves would then be back where they were when they were a 3-4 seed with Jimmy.
Yeah.
Like that, where it's like, I'm not picking them to really go to the final. For me, that's what I'm saying, is it would take that for me to believe that the Wolves are a playoff team that could approach the, 5-seed range. Right now, though, I mean, only a week in advance of it, I don't even know if they're a playoff team. It's those type of wins. Can you beat the elite teams? Because they haven't done that thus far. Who are their four losses? We got
Milwaukee, Philadelphia,
Memphis, and Denver,
which was the bad loss. And Denver, I guess you could say, was a bad loss because they didn't play well. But I mean, that's a good team.
There's a couple different ways to look at those four losses. Three of them are against very good teams in Philly, Milwaukee, and Denver. All four of them are against very big teams.
Yes.
And obviously that's something we've kept our eye on this whole year, and as something to monitor. Washington, Houston, Utah? How big is Utah? How big is Utah now?
Go Bears big. I haven't watched a ton of Jazz basketball.
I'm calling Utah. I haven't either. I'm calling big teams of teams that can go throw two bigs at you, which even Jaren Jackson and Valanciunas,
Jaren Jackson was terrible that, but that night still, in Memphis. But I know what you're getting
at. It forced the Wolves to... It's not necessarily what Jaren Jackson does, or it's not necessarily what any of those teams do with their two bigs. It's the way it applies pressure to this Wolves small ball style of play. So, I don't know. This has all been great so far. I do have my questions, but if you are able to roll through this next week, like, yeah, they're here.
Yeah. I'm curious now, have our expectations changed? I know mine certainly have. But in terms of what we would deem a successful season for this franchise now, because this was supposed to kind of be their basement floor, their ground zero, if you will, where that this is the start
like this
of
year.
Yeah, this entire year.
0 year, as they, I think we said that.
PJ before, Fleck, yeah. Yes, PJ year Fleck. Zero. That's yeah. exactly what this yeah. was supposed to be. Where if, and this could still be year zero.
I still think it probably is.
But they are much further along right now than I expected them to be in November. Right. My expectations are that this is, the future looks much brighter right now, in large part due to Andrew Wiggins. But the future does look much brighter, I think, right now than it than I anticipated it being.
So I was on the optimistic side, as you said before, and I was picking 37 wins.
Yeah.
If they finish the season now with 37 wins, I think that would be underwhelming.
I agree.
I think they hit expectations fine if they win half their games and miss the playoffs.
I'm with you where I think that expectations now are about to, if you finish 500 as the Wolves, this is a success.
When we say expectations, who is expectations? You know, it's like, where does that come from?
I don't know.
Just us, just our heads, like the little.
What I expect. Yeah, me. I'm selfish.
Our expectations.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that is what I expect.
Not Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's not Kendrick Perkins. And for me, it's not 538 because I don't really know what the
somewhere
basis
in the
is
middle.
Behind either of those two. But yeah, I am expecting this team to be even better than I thought it was before because I now know that this system doesn't just embolden Cat and emboldens, I think, not just Wiggins too, a lot of these guys on the roster. I had a ton of questions. We were like, okay, it kind of makes sense to, you know, space it out, play faster, but, you know, is this going to work? Because Trevion Graham can't shoot. Okogie can't shoot. Lehman's not a great shooter. Like, there's all those questions. And now I think we've seen, even with some of those more niche guys, whatever, that it's not even that they're shooting well, but they fit it a little bit better. Like, Okogie is finding a way to fit this system despite not being any better at shooting.
Yeah. Well, and I think that there's something to be said for guys that just make winning plays. And I think, like, Trevion Graham's a guy that does that. He's not a good shooter.
Yeah, loose ball, you're like, yep,
Trevion Graham makes plays that win you games. It's hard for me to really describe what that is. You either know what I'm talking about and you're like, he's 100% right, or you have no idea.
Been watching Wolves games,
if you watch Trevion Graham play, you know that he is.
But should be clear, this is not Danny saying he's one of the best players on the team.
No. I'm saying that he does things on a regular basis that help them win games. I'm not saying that he's the reason they win games. I'm saying that little things that he does helps them. And Josh Okogie is the same way. Now, Josh Okogie also at times does things that help them lose games because, as my favorite way to describe Josh is, he just does things. They're not all good, but he always does things. That's what Josh Okogie is.
My buddy texted me last night and said, Josh Okogie is a player who would play 20 minutes on any team.
Yes, across the league.
And then he followed up, he goes, 20 minutes, no more, no less. Play 20 minutes a game for the Lakers and 20 minutes for the Gophers.
He might play more for the Gophers.
I was like, I don't know. I kind of like that. That's
He might play 35 for the Gophers.
Maybe. But
I don't think they're supposed to be any good this year. I don't watch college basketball.
Me neither. It is, so you're getting, so Okogie, Graham is in the starting role. He's playing a good amount. And now Okogie is playing too. And basically, I don't know if this is just doomsday, like worst case thinking, but I'm trying to think about now if I'm playing these Wolves and this is the way I understand them, what adjustments am I going to make as a coach?
Mm-hmm.
And just one thing, I think I said to you when we were at the game last night, Andrew like makes a really good read to like penetrate to the nail and he kicks it out on, he's got Trevion Graham on the left wing and he's got Josh Okogie on the right wing and he hits Josh Okogie. And it's like an open three, and Okogie does his pump and go, and he gets to the rim, flails in, misses the layup, but gets his own offensive rebound, puts it back up, makes it, gets fouled for the end one.
Just like they drew it up.
Doesn't make the free throw. but it's like, I'm like, okay, that's like a good play. Josh Okogie, you're good at that. But you know what that play needed? that needed a that needed somebody to just take that open three-pointer
sure.
and knock it down.
Well, that's why this isn't the perfect roster for this system, and I don't think that you're if you said that to Ryan or you said that to Gerson, you're not going to get pushback from them about yeah. that. They understand that that's what this is. That's why a lot of ways this is year zero. Because this yeah. isn't this is not the perfect roster for what they want to do, but I do think that a lot of the pieces are have high enough basketball IQs to make it work somehow, some way. Whether it's yeah. by shooting, whether it's by trying to attack the rim, I think that they're smart enough to know their limitations, and not everyone does that. I think that matters, though.
It was cool to see in Detroit after when their limitations were exposed, right? I mean, the main one being, in two ways, I would say. They were exposed in the Denver game on Sunday night by not being able to make threes at a high rate.
6 of 45
and being undersized. I mean, we saw the Nuggets' second half adjustment was, all right, if you're going to play small, we're just going to have Paul Millsap
yeah,
go
Paul Millsap just destroyed Trae Young Graham that second half.
Exactly. And then Layman, once Layman came in for him too, because it's like small and then smaller or thin and thinner.
Yeah.
And, but what I'm saying this was encouraging is they come out on a back-to-back in Detroit the next day, and they play the exact same style against, which was, you know, playing fast, getting up threes, and they're playing a similarly, I mean, Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin, right,
mm-hmm.
is very similar to Jokic and Paul Millsap.
Yeah.
And they stuck with it. They played the same way, and Blake Griffin still kind of got his on Trevion Graham. But I think it would be easy. I can imagine being a player in that situation and starting getting discouraged in
frustrated.
Why is this what we're doing here? You know, or if I'm Noah Vonleh on the bench, I'm like, why the heck is Jake Layman on
Blake Griffin
right now or something like that? I mean, literally, that is me tweeting it during the game. But
so it's Dane Moore thinking that sitting on the bench.
But it's to their credit, they stuck with it and found success in it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's just probably the biggest thing I've underestimated this year because, you know, I'm up on my high horse of like, I don't know if this roster fits to shoot or I think they're too small. They're going to get beat up. But those things can be true. But if they're bought into it, like top to bottom coaching staff through all 15, like that outweighs some of it.
Well, I think so much of it is, and Gerson has talked about this a lot, is that they want teams to adjust to them. Right? Mm-hmm. They've said that countless times.
Right.
And using Trevion Graham on Paul Millsap is a negative on the defensive end, but they want to be good enough offensively where the Nuggets have to figure out something else because it's not working for them either. That's what they want to do. It's not always going to work, especially right now when you have a very imperfect roster. But that's what that goal is right now. Well,
and I think part of their thinking is the Wolves are almost daring you to be like, okay, with Paul Millsap or Blake Griffin, like, go ahead and back us down because neither Denver or Detroit is that what their main offense is.
Well, no one wants to do that other than Joel Embiid today.
Exactly. So there's kind of like it didn't work, but I think and what Ryan has said is the logic of it is it gets them out of playing pick and roll basketball. It gets them out of spacing the floor, finding guys for threes. Like
I mean, they kind of got Paul Millsap ate Trevion Graham for lunch in that second half. But they held Denver to 90 points in regulation.
Yeah.
That's not a bad end result. It didn't look pretty all the time, and it certainly didn't look pretty for the Wolves on offense that game.
Yeah.
But that defensive effort was fine.
I'm struggling with how to assess it, like just the defense as a whole of this team, because I think you see them sacrificing some things.
Yeah.
Being willing to give up certain areas to take care of others. And those things they give up can be so jarring of like, wow, you're going to give D'Angelo Russell a 15-foot pull-up every time.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other side of it is you're like, well, D'Angelo Russell's kind of the only one who's doing anything.
Yeah.
Or in the third quarter, it's only Paul Millsap. Like, so as a viewer, you feel like you can't just keep gifting them a matchup. But maybe today in 2019 when there's just – the game is so much, and it's so much art of including all five players. When you do that, maybe it's just a deterrent to everything else. I don't know. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
No, it makes sense, and I do think it's a little early, and we talk about small sample size with Andrew. I think it's a little small of a sample size to really try and evaluate the defense too as a whole. I think that maybe in 2 weeks after they've hit the 20-game mark, we could have a more honest conversation about that.
Well, they've started defending different since the Golden State game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I, I thought that's happening. I asked Ryan about that today at practice, and he said, yeah, after, you know, the Denver game. And I think they just started really basic. Like, really basic. They just said, all right, if they're going to set a high screen, drop Cat back, try and fight over it. I mean, last night you saw way more creativity. You saw Cat being up and engaged a little bit more.
I think they had to a little bit more because of what San Antonio wants to do offensively.
Yeah.
Where San Antonio has the most different offensive profile from every other team in the league. Where they're fine shooting from 17 feet every time with DeRozan.
So that's what I asked. I was like, so is this about the teams you've played, or is this about adding something to it? And he goes, no. Like, he's like, it's like with Andrew, who we were just having drive to the basket at the beginning of the year. Now we're having him pass out of it. He's like, we were doing this defensively at the beginning of the year, and now we're adding on to it. And I think the way he put it was like, it's like a misconception that you put in all your stuff in training camp. And then that's just what you roll out.
Especially when it's new to everyone. It has to, right. Because it's not like, oh, well, only Travion Graham really needed to learn this. Like, there's a lot of turnover, same system. That wasn't the case. Everyone was starting from scratch.
Right.
That's why you have to kind of take this around a little slower.
And you were there when he was at the game last night. He's kind of going to look at it in 10 games, like 10 game chunks of like, okay, this is what we had here. And I think the idea is to kind of, you know, build the Lego house up of you start with the foundation and keep what every team's trying to do. But I think specifically with the defense, it was like so basic at the beginning. You're like, we were a team that got rocked by pick and rolls last year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put in something really basic and let's build up from there. And I guess I haven't looked at where they're at today, but I'm entering last night's game. I think they still were better ranked defensive efficiency than they were offensive efficiency.
I haven't checked that today either, but
I mean I know that's where they have been. It's just, I don't know. The offense, to me, I like the offense more.
It's more fun, yeah.
Well, even I just like believe in it more.
Everyone likes offense more than defense,
maybe that's just
too.
It.
Like we live in a society where it's easier to pick fun to score. Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, oh, you're pointing out errors.
The NBA is so set up for offense to be successful. I mean, it's not like, oh, you scored 8 points, it's really good. No, it's terrible. You're supposed to score half the time, half your possessions, right?
That's true, that's true.
Like, that's why offense is way more fun.
Yeah. I feel like we got ahead of ourselves and giving them four games. The next four games. Like, I don't want to say I'm projecting that. I'm saying if they win against Washington, Houston, and the Jazz games, then this is like, wake the heck up. Like, this team is for real, for real.
So what I want to dive into now is we've seen a few different starting lineups, and not in a way that I think we anticipated seeing a few different starting lineups, and it's been out of necessity. Jeff Teague had an illness he was dealing with. Carl had a suspension. Travion Graham's flipped with Josh Okogie once or twice. Like, it's looked different. But what would you think about Jeff Teague, not necessarily in a permanent bench role, but a bench role for now, where he came off the bench against San Antonio last night, looked really good off the bench, and I also think that set up Andrew Wiggins for more success.
Okay, I think it's a couple different things here. The idea, right, like the thrust of the basic argument for having Teague come off the bench is that Andrew gets to stick in the role he's been, which is quote-unquote the point guard.
Yes, that is my argument for this to happen.
Yeah, but the thing is even if Teague's in a bench role and he's playing 25 minutes a game, that doesn't mean he's Andrew's backup.
No.
You know, what I'm saying is they're going to still overlap a bunch.
Sure, and that's fine. That's totally cool, but I also think it's more valuable right now to have Jeff out there with a second unit where that's kind of short on creation. Especially while Shabazz Napier is still out with that hamstring injury, I think it makes more sense to have him with the second unit that's short on creation. We saw what he could do in that situation.
Do you think that Ryan's going to stick with like hockey shifts where it's like
I have no idea.
I mean, that's just generally rare in the NBA.
Sure. But like what we saw on Wednesday night against San Antonio, if you could bottle up that plan, and it's not always going to work, but I like the rotation of it.
Yeah. See, my thing is you're going to need to navigate. You want to keep this Wiggins. You're going to need to navigate how that happens with Jeff Teague no matter what. Because they're both going to play. Mm-hmm. Because Jeff Teague's probably like the fourth best player on this team.
Sure.
And so if that is the case, you need to figure it out and you need to find a way to make that work. Why would you? I don't like the idea of cutting Teague down from a 30 to a smaller role because he's. because he is someone who moves the needle. Like in the Denver game, I think they win that Denver game if Jeff Teague plays because he's just a little more talent.
One more three-pointer with the Denver game.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing because we can look back at any of the losses and be like, well, I mean, if they would have had Carl against Milwaukee, they might still lose, but it's a different game or whatever. Like you could do that really anywhere. I think that you're getting the best version out of Andrew when he can start the game as the point guard. Like his last five games when Teague's not been in the starting lineup with him,
I think you
want to
keep
awesome. This
Wiggins, but I don't think you know that it's because he started.
No, I don't. Don't know that, but it's been true. It's not proven as fact as to that's why, but it's one of the circumstances that he's been best under. Like the last seven games have been really good for Andrew, but the last five, once Jeff started dealing with that illness, the last five games, he's at 31.6 points, five boards, six assists,
but
only
do you not agree
one and
with,
a half turnovers.
Do you not agree with Ryan that there is not really a point guard position and that like when they're out there, there's two or three guys that can initiate?
No, I do agree with that. But it seems when Jeff is the one of the ones out there, he leans towards more being a true point guard than if it's Jarrett and Andrew or if it's even Shabazz and Andrew. Like Jeff seems to be of the point guards that aren't Andrew. He's the most ball dominant one.
For sure. I mean, yes, that's true. I just said Shabazz is coming back, too.
At some point. We don't know when, at some point. And that's when
you should play him too, right?
Absolutely. He deserves to be on the floor. That's when this gets complicated. But I'm saying for right now, at least until Shabazz Napier is back, and then you can reevaluate then. But I think until then, it makes more sense to have Jeff Teague coming off the bench.
Yeah, I just think Jeff Teague's a lot better than Jarrett Culver right now. And I would want him to get more minutes.
I don't disagree with you because he is a lot better than Jarrett Culver right now.
The opportunity cost question is... Yeah. Andrew starting the game and playing more right from the get-go in that fashion and less with Teague versus playing Teague more and Culver and other guys less. I think, I don't know. I just don't think you have a lot of really good bench players on this team, and I think Teague's solid. So I would like to see him in a big role, probably still starting, but... I would certainly get it.
Just because he's coming off the bench doesn't negate being a big role. Because I do think that they still share the floor a lot. But I think if you can, especially when Andrew gets off to a hot start, it feels like everything just seems to go better. Like last night, I think he had 11 points in the first quarter. He was fantastic early on. You knew it was going to be a good Andrew Wiggins night.
I don't know, man. Counter to that is, though, at the beginning of the year, he started really slow in the Brooklyn game, in the Miami game.
He didn't have a good game against Brooklyn. Against Brooklyn, he had a bad game against Brooklyn. And,
but he got going at the end.
He made winning plays in the final 3 minutes of the game. He played a good final three minutes and had a bad game.
Well, they won the game because of him. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. And then Miami, too. I mean, I don't know. I just don't think I agree with the starting point of it. But I see the logic in wanting to keep Wiggins in the role broadly.
And I totally get wanting to start Jeff Teague. He's unquestionably one of your five best
players. If Jarrett
Culver
was better, man, if Jarrett Culver was playing better, then sure.
What have you seen from him lately, Jarrett Culver in specific, that can give optimism? Because he has been underwhelming, I think is the best way to put it.
Doesn't it kind of just feel like, not like that underwhelming, but kind of the same thing every game? Where you're like, okay, there's a couple interesting wiggle plays you get to the rim.
Spurts. I think he's...
Interesting he's little steal here.
Yeah. Nice
jump hesitation shot still doesn't
move,
look very good.
Nice like, hesitation it, move. To, he is at his best when he's getting to the rim right now.
For sure.
And I don't think that it's close. Like, there's no close second to what he's been really good at.
So before the game last night against San Antonio, he had played 46% of his minutes at point guard, according to Cleaning the Glass.
Yeah.
And in those minutes, the offensive rating is like 12 points better than the 54% of his minutes when he's playing on the wing. And you and I have been talking about that. I mean,
he looks so much more comfortable.
So that's probably a stronger point to your keep with his starting lineup.
That's fine too.
Like I could see that because then if it's Teague's out there with Wiggins and with Culver, then Culver becomes third on the food chain of initiator duties. You know, so I'm more so than like Wiggins and Teager, they're gonna have to figure their stuff out no matter what. If I'm thinking about it as a coach, I'm trying to find a way to keep Teague and Culver staggered as much so as to get better Culver and giving him a little bit more initiation roles.
And that makes sense because I do think that that's what the numbers back up him being more comfortable there. The eye test tells you that he's more comfortable with the one, but the numbers certainly back up the eye test from what you just read. Like, that's not really a question to me. It's when's he going to look comfortable doing everything? I think that that's the biggest question I have.
I think the jump shot, we were ripping on the hitch or whatever before. For me, the thing I'm saying when he's shooting is it's like he doesn't know that those are spots to shoot it. He's like, okay, I am kind of open. I kind of want to attack, but okay, I'm going to shoot. Like, there's a lack of decisiveness kind of in his jump shooting that I think that's probably just the natural progression of what he's figuring out right now of the NBA. But I don't think he knows where he fits in on this team yet. And that certainly doesn't preclude him from always being that way. But the reason I think he isn't a huge needle mover at this point is because, I mean, really, if you go through the rotation guys, so many of these guys seem to have great chemistry together. From an Okogie and Covington, Jang and Wiggins, like, up and down. Culver, like, who are you like, oh yeah, Culver's got a good chemistry with that guy. Like, I don't think
no one comes to mind right now.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's not to say he has bad chemistry with anyone.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah,
it's agreed. Nothing jumps out at me.
Whereas pretty much every other player on the team, I think I could put like, oh yeah, this is a guy who they seem really,
they want a pair.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Jarrett's, you know, he's figuring out all those elements of it. The a new game on a bigger, faster, stronger floor and the interpersonal elements of it. Like, I think it's all it's coming together for him. It's certainly not been terrible.
No, I'm not down on him. Like, yeah. I still think he's going to be a really good NBA player. I don't know when we're going to start to see that.
We do always give rookie point guards time to say, you know, it takes them longer to adjust. And I know Jarrett Culver came in as the label of a wing, but he's kind of a point guard too.
Yeah.
So there, I think there's reason for, if you're going to give Darius Garland
time,
rope, you know, like
Colin Sexton last year in Cleveland, both those guys, I mean, they're Cleveland and whatever, yeah, both of them, the same position in Cleveland, basically. But Colin Sexton last year, and it's different because he's undersized compared to Culver. He's like 6'2" compared to Culver 6'5" or whatever he measured at.
But a point guard, you know,
he was really bad for the first half of this. Like
Trae Young too, man.
Yeah, Trae Young to a different extent. They were both just not good players for the first couple of months, and then they figured it out, and they were all rookie guys.
And there's, I mean, draft class to draft class, that's a thing of like it just takes point guards longer. And I think if you want to make excuses for Jarrett Culver, I think that's a pretty fair one to make for his slow-ish start. Or not like super meaningful start.
Yeah. Underwhelming.
Underwhelming, sure.
I think is the best way to put it. But the Wolves are good, man. This
it's going to be another interesting weekend, man. Like we were talking about last night, like the old Wolves, a home game against Washington, that's one that they just kind of cough up and lose. Like,
yeah.
If you want to be viewed as a playoff team, like you take care of business against bad teams at home.
All right, we've got about 2 or 3 minutes left here, but when do you think fans are going to buy into this team? Because like last night, I understand it's a Wednesday night. It was the first time it really snowed, but Target Center felt empty. And this is a team I think that deserves to have a sort of a following. And listen, I'm not going to try and carry water for this team. I'm not going to try and be like, oh, everyone should be there all the time. The Wolves are great, whatever. But they play an exciting brand of basketball, if nothing else. Like, this is a good product to watch.
I'm, as somebody who grew up here when the team was really terrible, like that when I wasn't in media or anything and I would go to Timberwolves games, you could go to Timberwolves games for very cheap.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's what people became accustomed to. They became accustomed to two things, the Wolves being terrible, and if you wanted to go, it was a cheap occasion. Now, the games are, now they're being priced at the level similar to the rest of the league. But people, again, it's the same Minnesotans, it's the same people here, that it's a different experience. They're like, what, not that I was sitting lower level for $9 before I buy it on eBay. Now I got to spend $75 to come watch the Spurs on a Wednesday. It's not that, I'm not saying the Wolves are gouging them. It's just
people,
those are two very different.
It's
used to it. And then the thing I would push back on you is I do think people are engaged in this team. I just think they are online and on TV.
Well, I just don't think that they've showed up to Target Center. That's what I'm saying. Because
But they're engaged with this team. I mean, it's a pretty good. I mean, you know, like Twitter works and clicks and downloads all your stuff. I mean, people are engaged in this team. I know that from the metrics that we see.
Yeah.
I just don't think that that's translating to the box office because of those reasons.
I'll be curious when it starts to, because I do think it will start to. If this team continues to play like this and they're still above 500, it's going to, that building's going to start to fill up.
You got to do things to pull in fans. I mean, even the Twins this year at the beginning of the year, they had that big like $5 thing, which just get people in the building.
Yeah, and they had the excuse of weather too, at least. Like, sure. Honestly, no one does want to go to an outdoor baseball game when it's 30 degrees. At least Target Center is warm inside.
You got to create a fan base. You got to create a fan base that the people around my age or older than me love this team because they loved KG 15 years ago.
Sure.
And now a 19-year-old right now was 4 years old last game KG played.
Meaningful like, game.
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, you need to make them connect to him, and I think that means you need to get him in the building.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more with that. That's Dane Moore. Find him on Twitter at DaneMooreNBA. I'm Danny Cunningham. I'm on Twitter at RealDCunningham. If you like the podcast, leave us a review. You can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the all-new Score North mobile app available for your Apple and Android devices. We will talk to you next time.